Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Impact Farming Show. Today, we have an amazing guest returning to the show, Chrissy Wozniak. How are you?
I'm doing great. Tracy, how are you?
Good. I am so happy to have you on the show. Those of you guys watching, Chrissy is the founder of North American Ag and the show host of North American Ag Spotlight. And what color is your tractor? Chrissy has been on. She is a fellow podcaster. And most importantly, she is also a dear friend from the industry. So Chrissy, I'm so excited to have you. We are going to chat a little bit. We have an interesting interview here. We're going to chat about your platform and what you do to give our audience a chance to get to know you. But we're going to dive deep into some egg policy. So before we go to the second part, why don't you tell our audience a little bit more about you, your shows, why you got started, all that good stuff.
Sounds good. I don't know where to start. I guess during COVID, my main company is marketing consulting, marketing automation, CRM setup, social media management, all of that stuff. And so during COVID, I was grounded like everybody else. I lived in Canada at the time and on the border between close to Niagara Falls and Buffalo and on the Canadian side. And being grounded, I was like, what the heck am I going to do here? This is crazy. I was used to traveling quite a lot for work. And so I was reading a book about, you know, how to do business in hard times. And the book said that if you take your existing network and serve them and don't expect anything back, that's the best thing to do. So I'm like, okay, that's what I'm going to do. And then I'm like, what can I do? So I called a whole bunch of colleagues and one came back to me and said, you know, those 10 questions at a trade show you get over and over and over and over again, and you get so tired of answering them by the last day of the trade show. We need somebody to ask those questions because we're all sitting at home not answering those questions. So I was like, well, I can do that. That's so easy. So that's what started the podcast, North American Ag Spotlight. It actually was a 3-day event. Actually, you were involved in the 3-day event. You were a moderator for us. And after the big 3-day event, I just had so many people asking, well, can you do another one? Can we do another one? I'm like, that was a lot of work. So then I started the podcast. And now North American Ag has grown to be the two podcasts. North American Ag Spotlight is about ag tech, ag issues, ag policy, faith and family. And so it's really everything that a producer or anybody in agribusiness needs to know to kind of keep their finger on the industry, what's happening, and then also on the heart of the industry too, because that's what I like the most. And then what color is your tractor is what color is your tractor, the story of the ag brands you love and the ag brands you love to hate. So that's the idea for that podcast came about because I spent most of my career on the road. And so I got to eat with all of the other carnies. I call everybody carnies in the industry, that we, you know, set up our tents in each town, and you develop really strong friendships as you travel around. And, you know, we'd sit there and we'd learn the actual stories of the people who run the companies, the manufacturers, the seed companies. And it always just really fascinated me, these people behind these companies, and nobody ever gets to hear of their story. So then also during COVID, I started this podcast, and this is just interviews with the manufacturers and they tell their story. So if I can get a hold of the founder, that's who I'll talk to, like Don Landall from Landall. I spoke with him and he has a fascinating story. But the historian from John Deere, obviously we can't talk to the historians from John Deere and New Holland and Case, but I was able to get a hold of all of them. So we've got most of the big companies covered, and it's just a fun, it has kind of a branding angle too. So if you like marketing, I always go through the story of the company. And then, you know, how do you hold on to brand loyalty in this age where it's just digital and there's fewer farms, fewer decision makers. And so they kind of, each of them tell, you know, what their plan is to gain market share, to keep market share. So that's really fun. And North American Ag, we also do webinars. and daily news too. And that's it for that.
Excellent. You're a busy lady. Okay. So today we're going to be talking about something a little bit different. And I have watched your journey over the last couple of years. And, you know, if you look at the evolution of the world, evolution of the agriculture industry, politics seem to be coming to the forefront of everybody's awareness like they have not in the past. And I know you've been covering ag policy and really diving in on a personal and professional level through, I think it's American Agri Women, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you touch a little bit on why you have become so interested in ag policy, why you're involved? And then what we're going to do is roll in and talk about four areas of ag policy that you are concerned about that are really coming to the forefront and farmers should be aware of. So do you want to chat a little bit more about American Agri Women, your involvement, and why you're so passionate about ag policy right now?
Yeah, I think, again, I feel like it's like the before Christ, after Christ, then the dating system, right? It's like COVID was like zero now, yeah. Right? Seems absolutely. Like everything shifted with COVID. So before that, I had my family farm. I had just bought it from my mother. My dad passed away in 2011. I was building my empire. I was happy where I lived, married to an American, or not quite yet, engaged for about a year at that time to an American who worked and lived in Buffalo. So we were in a unique position being in a border town during that time. When the border closed in March, actually, I lived a country song that year. In the week of March 13th, my dog died, my horse died, and I couldn't have my wedding.
Oh, right.
So it was like the whole thing, right? And my world just crumbled. Like, I've always been able to do whatever I want to do. And all of a sudden, the border closed, so I can't work. Like, what am I going to do? Just, you know, sit here and sing my country song, I guess. But so I saw really quickly, and I think most Canadians can relate, maybe not as much as somebody who lives on a border town, but that the rules changed really quickly. And general policymaking was thrown out the window. Mm. When the border closed, for the first few months, my husband was essential. He worked for FedEx at the time, so he was essential. He was able to cross the border back and forth. But one day, Health Canada decided that he wasn't essential to Canada. So they stopped letting him cross the border. He didn't have contact solution. He didn't have underwear. He had to go stay at our friend's house. From September till June, they wouldn't let him cross the border. And in that, from September till June, I just went through a huge, like, metamorphosis or something. I don't even know what to call it. But I, at the end of it, I decided that I have to have less risk in my life, and I have to remove this border. And that freedom's more important than my empire, which was a really hard thing to swallow. So, and I know not all Canadians felt exactly the same way, or that they didn't live in the same, a lot of people were happy that they could work from home, right? And, you know, I just wasn't one of those people. I liked the way my life was before. So I decided to, because we lived on the border, we had Cuomo on one side of the border and we had Trudeau on the other side of the border, and we decided to trade him up for DeSantis. So we moved down to Florida, just ripped off the Band-Aid, and really haven't looked back. So that's kind of the why. And as through this metamorphosis, and then now the following couple of years, I've really paid attention. I was always interested in politics, but not to this level. Now I really like to look at it from the minute each issue. What I really hate is when people treat politics like football, right? Or hockey.
Team are you on?
Right. And it's just, I bleed blue because I'm a Leafs fan. My dad was a Leafs fan. And right. Yeah. Well, we can't think about politics the same way. And I think everybody needs to really take a step back and think about the issues. So that's why the podcast, as it kind of evolved, I started doing at least once a month a egg policy, because whoever controls the food controls the people. And so for me, I have only really known agriculture, but that's the most important industry of all because of that plain fact. So as I started to learn more, and you just, you know, you see things and then you can't unsee things, and then you see more and you see more and you see more, and you really realize, like, we have to start standing up for farmers. We have to start standing up for this industry, or else we're going to lose control of it. And so, you know, Canada's further ahead than the US is in that, down that path. And I feel like, you know, can Canada come back from that? I don't know. But I think that Canadians need to try. You know, you don't have to run away like I did, but I'm trying my hardest here. But that leads me to why I joined American AgriWomen. And a friend of mine, a great ag PR guy from out in California, his name is Warren Clark, and he owns ag PR. And I developed a relationship with him through media circles. And he just kept pestering me, saying, you know, you need to join these people. I think that this is right up your alley. And I'm like, I'm so busy. I ended up calling a few, or I don't know if he arranged it or whatever, but started to talk to these ladies. And I was just overwhelmed at how passionate they were about the same things that I was. You know how you feel, especially during the pandemic, you just feel kind of alone, like you're in this struggle all by yourself, and you can see things that are wrong and you can't do anything about it. Well, I started meeting these women, and they were all like, we're a force for truth. That's actually the motto. We're a force for truth. That really resonated with me. So I went to, there's three meetings a year. I went to the first one, which was in Nashville, the mid-year meeting, and fell in love with the organization. They spend 2 days going over their 340 something positions on ag policy. And the entire group has to agree and vote that these are our positions for this year. So, and it was amazing to me, where we can't even decide on the stupidest things, like what color your car should be, or, you know what I mean? Like what you should eat, or, you know, organic or not organic, or there's a million trigger issues, right? But how on earth did we get this group of women that are so aligned with their values that we could all agree on 300 and something things? Like, that's fascinating. So that meeting is in preparation for the annual fly-in to DC. So we prepare all of those positions, and then you go back home, everybody gets to work, and the executive team comes up with the policy book and these beautiful folders. And then we all fly into Washington, DC in the first week of June. And we go meet with the USDA, meet with EPA, meet with your senators. You make your own appointments, senators and congressmen, and you go and tell them. And we try to get as many people from as many states as possible to come in and have their voices heard. And it was mind-blowing. My daughter went to, it completely changed her life. It changed the trajectory of her life, being able to see that if we're a strong enough voice, we can be heard. And right now, farmers are just 2% of the population. They need more of us. We need more of us. I wanted to be a farmer when I grew up. That's why I chose agriculture, but I couldn't because I didn't have a farm. So that's why I chose agribusiness. But there have to be more people like-minded that want to help the industry, really want to help humanity. And that's why I joined. I was elected last month at the convention as the vice president of communications for the organization, which is a great honor. I'm very excited. We're going to be doing a lot more new messaging, and I can't give it all away because, you know, everybody will see as it starts coming out. And I'm also secretary for Florida AgriWomen as well. So I want to put into action the things that I see and believe, and like I said, I love freedom, and I love choices, and I love free speech, and I love property rights, and so I gotta put my words into action. So that's why I'm with American AgriWomen.
Okay. So American Agri Women, you said there's chapters, and how many people, what is their membership base? It's a couple hundred, isn't it?
It's, I think it's over 1,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's huge. Quite large. Most states have an affiliate. Some don't. Okay. And then there used to be a Canadian affiliate too. So, you know, that's always an option too. A lot of what we do too is also training on how to do these things. So, you know, for Canadians to really learn how to, you know, talk to your MPs and, you know, how to make a difference in your at the provincial level and, at the national level, it's, you know, it's a great resource. It's pretty much the same. We're hoping. So this year we're actually opening it up to all women's groups, not just us.
Okay.
So it can be, you know, any other women in any other organization can come register and hear. This is a brand new thing. It's always just been members. But because we need more voices, we need more. This is also an election year. It's a really important year to get excited about what's happening in DC and put our feet down.
Well, and you know what? The opening it up is also great, probably for membership as well, but just working together with other groups, because sometimes I find there's so many people that have a mission and a desire and a drive, just like non-for-profits, and everybody forms their own non-for-profit, and we're all working in silos, just like the commodity organizations too, right? Where it's this commodity, they have their board and membership, and then there's this one. But if we amalgamate and work together, there's a stronger voice behind that, right? So bringing in women from other organizations, that's a great idea. I love it.
Yep.
Okay. So thank you for sharing that. And thank you for talking more about American Agri Women. I know you're a huge fan and always chatting to me about it. So let's dive into the egg policy. We're picking the four top that are coming to the forefront. Let's start with ESGs. Do you want to share more high level what that is and maybe touch on what the point is and what the concerns are? Give me your perspective on that.
Yeah, and I'm so happy you chose that one first. It's kind of an issue that's kind of just getting slid under the carpet and kind of been rolled out quietly. And as people in agribusiness and farmers, it's like, that doesn't concern me, but it does. It concerns everybody. And this is coming not just from our federal levels, but it's actually coming down from a global level. And so I'll start with what it is first. So ESG is environmental, social, and governance. And what it kind of is, what it replicates is your credit score. So you get your first credit card when you're in college, and as long as you pay it back, your credit score keeps that relationship with credit just keeps getting bigger and bigger, and your credit score gets higher and higher, and then something bad happens and you can't pay your car, and then your credit rating goes down, right? And then you build it back up again. But that is a socially acceptable relationship with money, right? And that's a number that is related to you and your relationship with money and how much risk you would be to a creditor. The problem now is that it's shifting to this environmental, social governance score. And if we think about that really carefully, it is up to your environmental footprint, your social beliefs, and governance, the rules and policy.
Okay.
And I think you could get five people in a room and nobody would agree on what all those three things mean. And everybody could say what their values are in each of those three buckets, and nobody would agree. So the big thing to me is, who is saying what's right and wrong in those areas? The just today, I've got some notes here or articles that I printed out for today. And even today, straight out of press release straight out of World Economic Forum this morning that I received in my inbox was that the title is Net Zero Industry Tracker, $13.5 trillion investment needed to fast track decarbonization of key hard to abate industry sectors. We're going to get into this a little bit later, but it's getting pushed down as this is the most important thing, this decarbonization. This is something that the biggest corporations are doing now. I've covered this in so many episodes. I have one episode called, Do You Want More ESG on Your RFID? One of the best descriptions of how ESG is affecting agriculture. It was an interview I did with Bill Bullard from RCAF, and he really breaks it down. So if anybody wants to, I don't know, they can contact you and get that link. He does a great job of really breaking it down, even just in the cattle industry, how that can affect. But money should be with money. Your social beliefs should stay with your beliefs.
You know, and Chrissy, we'll stereotype agriculture. And I mean, from the polls and from the red and blue states, we kind of know where the agriculture audience is. Again, there's outliers on each end in the middle. We kind of know the values of the agriculture industry. And I think more than anything, if people are sitting at home, there's a lot of people with concerns about the direction of the world and our countries and our government and agriculture. Right. And I heard one person at a conference, and I hate to bring up these words because I don't like putting the idea out there, but license to farm. And I was in the audience and he touched on ESGs and he was very vocal about it. He's a big farmer. And he said, I'm in touch with these companies. And if they're talking to me about ESGs and what I need to do, I need to hear the sense behind it. Because right now, in his words, it sounds like we're going down a path where we're going to have to be licensed to farm.
Yeah, that's it. And it's already happening. A year ago, I was contacted by a major food company in the US, and I won't say who it was, but you have those products in your home for sure. Everybody does. And they're not healthy. And they contacted me for some advertising, wanted to be on the show. And as I just, you know, I always have a meeting and try to feel if they're a good fit. And they said to me, well, our goal is, you know, we have our ESG goal and we're trying to fulfill that. So we need to teach farmers how to farm better so that we can calculate their carbon sequestration so that we can get a better ESG score. And they said it straight out. That was over a year ago now.
For the most part, I think policy has been over here and we've enjoyed a lot of freedom and opportunity and not a lot of interference. So I don't know that farmers are paying as much attention. And if they hear it now, it's like, oh, that sounds good. But there are people that are saying, wait a minute, what is this? We have concerns. So that's why I'm so happy that you're sharing with us. Why don't we go to property rights? And within that, I know you want to talk about water rights as well. So can you share more on that?
Yeah. So like you said, you know, you talk to a producer and they're busy and, you know, they want to sleep when they get home and it's almost impossible to watch the news. And, you know, if you do, you don't even know if it's true or not. Right. So it's just like, it's just easier not to pay attention. And so whenever I'm at a farm show and I say, you know, you need to pay attention to policy, it's very important. And, oh, I don't like politics. Mm. And then I say, well, what about that spot in your field that floods in the spring, you know, and that, but then by end of June, it's just a dry spot where, you know, nothing popped up or, you know, the corn struggling or whatever, you know, that spot there. Do you know that the EPA is trying to make that waters of the United States? These, you can't farm that area. Doesn't matter if it's dry half the year.
Really?
Yes. So luckily this year we've definitely made some gains. So the it's called Waters of the United States, which is WOTUS, and it's about the Clean Water Act, which the EPA has been fighting with the U.S. government about and the people for many years now. It's kind of this big soap opera drama about this particular issue. First of all, the EPA is the Environmental Protection Agency of the United States. It's important to note that they are not elected government officials. They are appointed by the administration.
Okay.
Right. Yep. So now you have people passing very, very consequential rulings on things they don't know anything about, and nobody elected them to do that. A lot of times they're activists who are making these rules. It came down. So the original rule was part of the Obama administration. And then when Trump came in, he added a very important part. And that was, if it's navigable waters, it's waters of the United States. So that means you can navigate it with a vessel. That means he protected farmers from those low spots.
Okay.
Because you can't navigate those waters.
Right.
Right? Yeah. So that was a very good first thing. One of the first things Biden did when he came back in is remove that. And then it went back to the Obama era. So this has been a fight back and forth about who really owns that land. If there's water in April, is it United States water or is that yours, your water? So a court case, Sackett versus EPA, made its way all the way up to the Supreme Court. And what they were fighting over is the EPA said that on their land, it was wetlands and it was protected and they couldn't build their house. So they brought all the way up to the Supreme Court. And luckily in May of this year, 2023, Supreme Court, all nine justices ruled in favor of the property owners. This was a huge win. There's still a long way to go, but this was a huge win for farmers. So they still have to, you know, tighten up the language now. It's probably always going to be a problem, right? But at least that has now reached that level. The basis underneath all of this is the 30 by 30 rule. And if you listen to enough of Biden's speeches from the very beginning, you'll see he made a bill or a proclamation and a speech about this 30 by 30, which means 30% of the United States will be owned by the government and back to its natural habitat by 2030, 30% of the United States. So what they're doing now is going and putting monuments in all of these places and designating them as monuments, these huge parks, huge national, like farmland, everything. So right now is the time to start thinking about property rights, because this is a goal of the current administration. And this is not just in the US. This is a global thing. Every single country has the same goals. And they want to return nature to its original state. And this is in the West, they're fighting hard against this because that land, a lot of it is leased land. And these rules are making it so that farmers can't graze on that land anymore. And so there's a lot there. I've done a ton of episodes on this too.
Right.
And it's a very big deal, but it is top down. The other thing to think about is that on these monuments, these now like millions of acres, are minerals that we could be using. And they're being locked up forever. So we could be independent in North America, but instead we're leaving it up to other countries to go do the mining for us so that we can all have our gadgets. It's hard because when you're succession planning and you might not have a child to leave the farm to, or the kids don't want it, it's very easy to, let's put it in a conservation easement. We need to be careful and read what you're actually signing up for.
Okay.
Because we're losing farmland because of this.
Right. Mm-hmm. And if it gets put into a conservation easement, I imagine maybe at one point it might not be able to be converted back. to farm on. That would be a concern.
And
right?
That's part of it. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So a few red flags there, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Do you want to share anything else on property rights, WOTUS?
Or did be aware of what's happening. Read the bills. Don't just read headlines. Read what's behind the headlines.
You know, and that's the crazy thing too. There's a lot going on. And I say now more than ever, there's encroachments into agriculture. Agriculture seems to have that spotlight. We need to be the poster child for the environmental movement. And of course, as farmers, there's nobody that likes land more than farmers. Nobody that cares for land more than farmers. Exactly. So to us, that's a no-brainer. So another one that is a big one, no surprise to anybody, there seems to be an attack on animal agriculture. And then somebody watching, listening will go, of course, Tracy, PETA's been around forever. Vegans hate animal agriculture. That is old news. But the attack on agriculture, animal agriculture, seems to be coming a bit from the government level. And we're more and more in the spotlight. So do you want to share what's going on?
Yeah. So I've spent this year quite a bit of time in California and hearing speakers. And this is kind of, I'd say California is a ground zero for a lot of this regulation that's getting put through. The things that are being discussed and bills proposed in California that are passing will eventually move their way east. They're going to move their way north. They're kind of the testing ground for all the crazy ideas. And I was a couple of weeks ago out in Fresno listening to the president of the Farm Bureau there. And what he says is it used to take 10 years, a decade, for the craziness of California to reach to the East Coast. Now it could be as little as a matter of months. Mm. And what I mean by this is this attack on animal agriculture, in that this one particular bill that California's put out is, and they're using policy, they're using regulation, right? They're not just picketing and, you know, throwing paint on fur coats anymore. They're actually getting in, these people are growing up, becoming grown-ups and entering the government and becoming activists within the government to write policy. And this is a huge problem. We need to raise those kids that don't want to farm, get them into the government and get some good guys on our side, right? And so this one is particular about the pork industry, where they're trying to regulate pork coming into California. So essentially they're regulating the entire United States and wherever else pork comes from to make sure they have the correct growing conditions, or else it can't be consumed in California. Okay. That creates a huge problem. Another thing in some of these crazy bills that they're trying to this one just blows my mind, and it's, they would like for animals to live half their life.
Pardon me.
So if a chicken can be 9 years old, or let's say 6 years old, we have to eat 3-year-old chicken. If a cow could be 30 years old, we need to eat 15-year-old chicken. Can you imagine? Actual policy that are trying to, because then it has like half of its life, so it's going to be happier.
That doesn't make sense. All farmers will go broke. Everybody will be eating old stringy meat. Nobody will buy it. Then Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Oh, really?
So that's the policy part. There's a lot of activists in government that are just writing crazy rules. And if enough people vote for them and people aren't showing up to vote, these things are getting passed. So that one is not passed yet, thank goodness, but they're trying. The other aspect of this attack on animal agriculture is the lab-grown meat issue. And I can tell you, I've been at conferences where the scientists and the people from universities are talking about this future that they see, where we have a more ethical way to produce food. And that is lab-grown meat. And I actually did a webinar. When was it last? Probably last January, kind of about this topic. It actually was about how to market your farm, your own produce, to try to, you know, build your own resilience network. But I really covered this issue, because if we don't do something now so that your community can buy meat from you, right? Even if it's just a small part of income, that policy could override you, right? So it's better to build that framework while we still can. But there is definitely a concerted effort. I took pictures during the presentations of how government is coming together. These are public-private partnerships. That's really important words to remember, where it's public means government, private means corporations. They buddy up together and they make the new technology, the new whatever it is, and then the government writes the policy alongside. And then you regulate something into existence. And so that's just a normal thing. We've always done that. 4-H started from a public-private partnership, right? So so it's, you know, that's what I say. You start seeing things and you can't unsee them. But we have to be aware of what's happening. So, and just don't, oh, that's crazy. That'll never happen, because it can happen.
You know, the absolute scary part, and I see it clearly, because I always say I have a leg on both sides of the fence. I'm a farmer. I'm an industry person. I go to these conferences, I come home, and I come to my farm. So I have a unique perspective on all angles, and then production, all of it. The scary part, and this includes politicians, a lot of the people that are involved in industry where they're pushing a lot of this lingo, a lot of these movements, a lot of them do not have a connection to the farm. A lot of the individuals that are in politics do not have connections to the farm. So my concern, and I know you watching will feel the same way if you're paying attention, farmers are less than 2% of the population, right? And we're farmers. So we're really busy farming. We don't have time to be involved in politics, and there's not enough of us to get into these organizations or politics to say, hey, wait a minute, what you're talking about is not true. And I've seen it firsthand. I was at a conference, and literally a room, they were all nodding, and everything that was being said was completely devastating to the agriculture industry. And I'm sitting there, of course, arms crossed, going, Oh, okay. And here's the danger, Chrissy, and I know you know this, and this is why I'm bringing it up, is a lot of these things sound good in labeling, in theory. Okay. And if you put this to a person that has no agriculture knowledge, it's devastating for our industry. Because look at that, Chrissy, okay? Imagine you know nothing about agriculture. I know nothing about agriculture. We're MPs in Canada, and there's a bill coming that we have to make sure animals live half their life before they are butchered. That's what you said, right? Mm-hmm. You and I, we both love our dogs and our cats. And oh, you see all those cute little cows on TikTok and little pigs and goats. They're all so cute. So you and I, intelligent women in government that love animals but have not a hot clue on how the agriculture industry works, how can we say no to animals living out half their life when we don't actually realize how the rest of it works? That's the danger, right?
And see how easy that was to explain?
Yeah.
Right? Like, that could be adopted overnight.
Totally. And I see it. Right? And you know, something that's cute, like I just let the cat bag on some of my feelings on that. Yes, those fuzzy little cows and goats that are at yoga, the little calves, all of that stuff making the forefront in TikTok and people bringing in farm animals into their home and having them as pets. Great, but also dangerous to our industry, because One thing I've said for a long time is as soon as you take fluffy cow and goat from agriculture and make them part of the family, would you butcher your dog for me?
Right. Yeah, no.
We're starting to move some of these animals that are born and exist to feed humanity. We're starting to blur the lines and bring them to pet status. And right. I've always thought that's a little bit concerning. And now when we look, when some of these policies are coming, the way the 98% of the population look at farm animals has changed. And who in their right mind would say, I don't want a cow to live out half her life, right?
Yeah. If that comes up to a vote, we're going to lose.
Yeah.
Right? For sure.
And I know there's, and you always hate to do the large brush stroke and just say everybody in politics don't get it. But let's be factual and go, if all politicians, let's take the same stats. If 2% of politicians actually have a connection to the farm or have grown up on a farm or farm, that's 2% versus 98% of their peers that think like individuals from the urban population, right?
Right. Yeah, that's exactly it. And one of my biggest concerns about this whole issue about creating these, you know, animals, turning the animals into these sacred beings, that's what it feels like to me. They're just being worshipped now. Animals are just being worshipped, and it's just another thing that we have to idolize, right? And I think the biggest concern for me would be that if now we have to rely on lab-grown meat and cricket farms and all of this in the future, however long that takes, nobody will be able to feed themselves. We are now 100% in debt to whoever is growing it.
I want to talk about fertilizer restrictions as our last of four policy items that we wanted to talk about in this conversation.
Yeah. And this issue ties in all the other ones too, right? So it's hard to know where to start, but I will actually start at the article that I started reading from the beginning. Oh yeah. The press release from World Economic Forum. And anybody, you can subscribe to these news releases. They come out every couple of weeks and it just says what they're doing and how they're disseminating their information. They were recently in California meeting with Governor Newsom, where they cleaned up California and got rid of the homeless people. Look, because, you know, China was coming and this big ordeal was happening. So it was interesting. If you don't pay attention, you might not know, but this is what's coming out of this. So this news release, World Economic Forum today, and I read you the headline already, which was Net Zero Industry Tracker. $13.5 trillion investment is needed to fast track decarbonization of key hard to abate industry sectors. So that all just sounds like a gobbledygook headline until you think about it from the agriculture perspective. And so what does this mean? They need to fast track the decarbonization. So this environmentalist agenda has to be fast tracked. They need $13.5 trillion to do it. The Net Zero Industry Tracker 2023, published in collaboration with Accenture, take stock of the progress towards net zero emissions for 8 industries: steel, cement, aluminum, ammonia. And I'm going to stop at ammonia. Mm. Why do we need ammonia?
Well, for fertilizer. Farmers might know that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So it's hidden sometimes, but this is why it's important to read these things. Because when you realize that we need to fast track, get this stuff done, and they need to create the ammonia industry to become net zero, and that becomes the goal, and we can't produce ammonia, that means we have less fertilizer, right? So not only this that's coming from the global system, right, from, you know, those powers that be, when all of the heads meet together and they come up with these great ideas, and none of them are farmers, they come together and make these plans. And then you come and get policy, like from the EPA again, the Endangered Species Act here in the US, that they're trying to push through. Even though it says Endangered Species Act, it's really about your inputs, how it's affecting these endangered species. It's the rules are so, there's no boundaries. It's just kind of a blanket slate of farmers just have to listen. And this legislation is affecting crop protection and fertilizer and farmland and all of it. So the fertilizer issue is not only coming from all the way from the top, but then the regulation is coming in and giving it a slam in the side too. So, and this is happening, as we know, the Dutch farmers, of course, went through this. I did an episode just about that as well. I think it was just called the Dutch. What can we learn from the Dutch farmers protest? Well, we could see it with the neonic debate in Canada over the last probably 10 years, right? Where let's have treated seeds. No, we're killing bees. Okay, well, now we have to spray, right? So it's all of these, I think, fertilizer input in or inputs and crop protection kind of go together in the heads of most people if you're not farming. And it kind of gets all bundled into the bad, bad stuff farmers do, right? So having our voice and putting out statements, signing these petitions, fighting back against EPA, that's really important.
Interesting. I've wondered a lot since about the pandemic. And if you're paying attention, you hear more and more. And I don't think whether or not you're reading all the articles, paying attention, I'm pretty sure most farmers out there have a general sense, feeling uncomfortableness in the fact that there seems to be a spotlight on agriculture for generations, for right. decades. Farmers have been able to produce food in the most healthy, effective, environmentally friendly manner possible. But now it looks like policy and the eyes of the 98% and the organizations, they're like, okay, what can we pay attention to now? What are we concerned about? Oh, agriculture.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. And I think even, you know, it feels like before COVID, we were, you know, trying to defend why we don't need cage-free eggs and why, you know, like all of these crazy things that, you know, why do you pull up to the Wendy's window and need an Angus? Like all of these marketing messages. And back then, what used to really irritate me is that it's not the producer who drives the marketing message. Because it's commodities, the producer has no and hasn't for the last 100 years or 75 years has not been in control of that message, right? So it's the corporations in the middle that dictate what the consumer sees. And to me, for the last 20 years of my marketing career, that's this the thing that drives me crazy, right? Like, here's a GMO free orange. Well, you can't, you know what I mean? Like, that stuff just makes me crazy. That's not possible. So this I think we've gotten to this place because there is no voice of agriculture, united voice of agriculture. I think it's whatever corporations in the middle. And because there are so few farmers, they don't have enough strength to rally into the cities and show what the truth is. And they're too busy working to be able to do that anyway. So that's why organizations like American AgriWomen are important, because together we can be a force for truth, right? But this food industry is leveraged too. So between policy and between horrible marketing messages, this is where we ended up.
Yeah. You know, and I agree with you completely. And that's why I wanted to have you on the show and pick your brain on this, because we need to do our due diligence as farmers and be paying attention to this, because exactly what you just said, there's always been the urban message coming at farmers, and farmers have become, or urban individuals have become more interested in where their food has come from, the farm to table food movement, all of which are great in essence, that people are interested in where their food's coming. But I attended a conference before the pandemic hit, and I clearly remember all the messaging at this conference was talking about egg-vacating. Mm-hmm. And that was our subject there. And how do we best speak to city individuals about how we produce safe, nutritious products? So I left there, and then there was the pandemic, and a lot of stuff was canceled. And now I see, as conferences are picking back up, there has been a massive acceleration and change in the tone of exactly the things that you just said. And as farmers, I don't know that we all know how much interest there is in our industry and how much policy has a spotlight on us. And, you know, it's not all bad. Of course, we want to take care of our land, right? You look around me, there's rivers, there's countless numbers of animals. There's probably a wolf walking by on the drainage ditch right there, right? There'll probably be elk going by. There's every single species of birds on the river. Nobody cares more about the animals and land than farmers. It's just naturally a byproduct of what we do. But I do think we need to be awake to what's coming, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I've thought so hard about this whole issue. And I think if you can, as a, it's a big job, right? Communicating to the masses. But I think if every farm just tries one way to reach into their community, just their local community. You don't have to be an influencer. I think that got draining on a lot of people, is trying to be influencers. Yeah. But really, just make a difference in your community. Like somebody was just telling me, I can't remember who it was, about one of the 4-H clubs. The farm actually sponsored kids to come to their farm to be able to work with their animals and show them in the 4-H. Like, there are a lot of things you can do just to reach into that community hands-on and just love on your community. You know, whether you can sell anything. I know a lot of commodity farmers, you know, from, you know, the whole Midwest, you're not going to go and sell raw corn and soybeans to the people, right? But you can have tours on your farm. You can have these, you know, these younger generations touching, feeling, seeing what they're smelling, right? Experiencing these things. And then the ag in the classroom, all of those programs are so important too, to try to get into, you know, these minds and show them what the truth of it really is. But yeah, I'd say if every producer could just go, okay, what's one thing I could love on my community for, right? With what could I do just to do one thing a month to just, you know, tell my community that I love them.
I love it. I think those are amazing parting words and a great place to end. I'll give you a last spot here. We covered the big four, ESGs, property rights, the attack on animal agriculture, fertilizer restrictions, and mainly call to action, get involved in the community, share what you can, talk to people. I'll give you the spot to share any last thoughts you have and how people can connect with you if they are interested in looking at your show episodes. I think one of the things we'll do, Chrissy, for the audience, we mentioned, I think, about three or four different ones of your episodes. I would like to include those as show links on our page so that anybody that's listening, they can go to Farm Marketer really quick and access those episodes that we talked about. So we'll do that. So last call out, if people want to connect with you, watch, listen to your show, how can they do so?
Yep. Go to northamericanag.com, sign up. I think it's at the bottom or on the contact us page, and then you'll receive our weekly email with the latest show. So that's the best way. And I don't just cover, like I said at the beginning, I don't just cover ag policy. It's just something that my heart is really, really burdened with, I guess. I cover a lot of ag tech and new products, amazing people in the industry. And actually, I'm going to have, did you hear about the cowboys that went over to Israel to help the farmers?
No.
I'm going to have them on my show soon. So yeah, so that's going to be great. So lots of different topics. And yeah, if you just go to northamericanag.com, that's how you find me. And then if you are interested in American Agri Women, go to americanagriwomen.org. Within the next few weeks, we're going to have a new website. It'll be still the same, americanagriwomen.org. The new website, you'll be able to sign up for action alerts. So this is a project that we're tackling where when we need to take action, you can sign up for action alerts. You won't get spammed. You're just going to get an email when there's something you can take action in your local, state or federal communities and take action. And whether that's writing, calling, going to an event, whatever, I think that's going to be a great tool for us. But that'll be rolled out in the next few weeks.
Excellent. Well, Chrissy, thank you so much for your time. This was a big topic and a lot of important policy items that we covered. A lot of it's very complicated and technical. So I really enjoy your passion that you brought and really just coming on the show and going, okay, high level, here's what's going on. Here's some of the concerns and here's what we can do. So thank you so much, Chrissy. And I really appreciate you spending your time with us.
Thank you, Tracy. Always great to talk to you.
I agree. I love when you're on the show. You in the audience, if you enjoyed this episode as much as I did, like it, share it, get it out there so other farmers obviously can hear about these items that are on the radar that we all need to know about. So please do like, share, get it out there, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Fastline Auctions, the ultimate destination for online farm equipment auctions. Looking to list equipment? Fastline Auctions knows farmers, and farmers have trusted Fastline for their equipment needs for over 45 years. With unmatched digital reach and direct-to-farmer catalogs, they can find the right buyer for your equipment. Not to mention, they have the industry's lowest commission rates. And if you're looking for equipment to buy, you can bid with confidence. No buyer premiums, no reserves, just integrity. Fastline Auctions, your trusted platform for hassle-free, cost-effective farm equipment auctions. Visit fastline.com for more information. You can join us for a tour of the Fastline Auctions platform July 13th at 6:30 p.m. To register for this webinar, go to northamericanag.com/fastline-webinar. That's northamericanag.com/fastline-webinar to register now.